The past.
Soldiers and transgenders.
The present.
Stroke the furry walls.
The future.
And another sequel?
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't get it. I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of red cum in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Rosebud. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another brand spanking new week of COL Movies. I have no idea where I was going with that. Well, I'd like to welcome to the show and welcome to my inevitable co-host. We'll start off with Steve. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. How about you guys?
Doing all right. And, of course, the impeccable Fuzzbear.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm doing great.
Does that make me peckable? If he's impeccable?
I like how we're inevitable hosts.
I know.
I know. I don't know. I'm just improving.
No, it's good.
Adjectives,
it's good.
As I'm going. So I'll have to figure something out. Something brand spanking new. Maybe I should put that in our thing. It's like adjective. Anyways.
Adjective of the week.
Adjective of the week. Exactly. So let's start off the show with some news. And we got a few things.
I was just kind of going around. I noticed that there's another reboot, our new term for the movies. Another reboot that's coming back, Fright Night, one of my favorite movies from back in the day. And found out through Cinema Blend that Imogene Potts is she's going to be the evil vampire. In this one, and Anton Yelchin is going to star as the Charlie Brewster reboot with Toni Collette as his mom. So it's going to be all kind of interesting stuff going on with this. And it's apparently the only one that's still out there is Billy Cole, who is kind of the Jerry Dandridge, who is kind of the he was kind of the evil vampire guy in the original movie, and his right-hand man, henchman person, is the only one really left to cast. But it's looking pretty good. It sounded like it's going to be interesting. But, you know, these reboots, are we really that stuck on finding new and fresh material, people? I'm not 100% sure.
I'm not against reboots, per se. But I think the material kind of should warrant it. Like, you know, I didn't particularly care for Alice in Wonderland, but hey, we've got a whole lot of new technology that we can use to make the movie maybe a little more visually interesting. Same thing with, I got in an argument with people about this all the time, is I'd love to see Wizard of Oz, like, straight up, and not the prequel, like, that's like, supposed to be coming out.
Like the original Wizard of Oz,
mm-hmm.
You know, done with today's technology, but basically the same movie.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe slightly different costume designs or something like that.
Yeah, they can update it, but, you know.
Did you like Tin Man?
It was okay.
It's just kind of like more like a sequel in the end, but.
Yeah, no, it was okay. It didn't really keep my interest, though.
I like that, actually.
I mean, the thing about Fright Night that I'm really interested in is, I don't know, I've mentioned this before somewhere along the way, is that I really like it when it's realistic. And I know we talked a little bit about this A-Team last week. I like the realism. So, like, I would much rather it be, you know, a person in a vampire costume versus, like, a CGI vampire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much that I miss that realism. You know, I miss the days of, you know, getting Fangoria magazine and seeing the cool costumes and getting all creeped out by it and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah, if there's a way to do it practically.
You agreed. Know? Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. You know, I just find it interesting that they're going to bring back the old school Fright Night, you know, with all of the hype of vampires. I feel like it's coming at the end of the vampire craze, but but we'll see. I hope it brings it. I mean, just like, you know, a lot of things, I hope it brings it to a new generation, but at the same time, like, you can rent the old one. It's really good.
Yeah, that's really true. Really good. It's funny that you talk about the vampire thing, because it was an, I was going to throw it here in the show notes, but I didn't get a chance. It was me and a friend of mine were talking about the possibility that, well, we heard rumors that there was going to be a, not really a reboot, but I don't know if anybody's fans of the Anne Rice novels that were made into movies, but the last one that was made was
Queen of the Dam.
Awful.
Yeah, I agree. Awful. what did you think of Interview with the Vampire with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt?
That one I liked. That one I did like.
Yeah, I really liked that one. Queen of the Dam I enjoyed because I kind of liked the music that was there, but so it kind of had an enjoyable film, but it just didn't quite work
for me.
And from my understanding, I've never read the novels, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know. But from my understanding, they actually took two books.
Yes.
Lestat the Vampire, I think, and Queen of the Damned, and merged them together. And that was...
Interview was more of the first two. Interview with the Vampire and Vampire Lestat were kind of the two that they merged for that first book. Oh. And then Queen of the Dam was its own.
Okay.
But
it was a merging of two books. The first one was a merging.
The second one was a merging of the Vampire, because there were parts of the Vampire Lestat in the Interview.
Oh, but okay.
The whole section of you know, him kind of waking up and becoming a rock star or whatever was taken right out of the Vampire Lestat. And,
You're right. Sorry.
And the problem was that, you know, they mashed two books together, but it was like they took the worst parts out of both books and mashed them together. I was like,
for Queen of the Damned.
What the hell are they doing? So the rumor that we heard was that they're actually going to make the Vampire Lestat into a movie, and that we've heard they're shopping Robert Downey Jr. to play Lestat, which I find interesting. Don't know if he's going to be able to pull it off, only because I think he's a little too old.
See, I would almost think that they should probably just go back to Tom Cruise.
Well, at this point,
Tom Cruise Anne Rice's.
Is way too old.
Well, he probably won't do it anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember that the Vampire Lestat was made a vampire when he was 18. So he needs to be very young.
Well, there's ways to look at it.
Yeah.
Speaking of vampire movies, I noticed, and this I only found this out again, another vampire movie trivia piece. I only found this out because actually I watched Avatar finally.
What took you so long?
Which I know, I just hadn't had a chance, and I finally rented it and finally watched it, and I must say, excellent, amazing, awesome, beautiful, all those adjectives.
We'll talk about it in a future show, I bet.
Yeah, in a future show. I'm just in general. I just want to say I had a lot, you know, I couldn't take my eyes off it. Really enjoyed it. But where the vampire piece comes in is I did a search afterward just out of curiosity on Sam Worthington because I wanted to find pictures. and when I did my search on him, found out that he's actually scheduled to star as Vlad, who turns into Dracula. In the origin story that's supposed to be coming out next year some point, the Dracula origin story called Dracula Year Zero. I hadn't heard of this one. So then Alex Proyas of Dark City is going to be the director, apparently. He's online for the directorship of that movie. So should be interesting. And I thought, you know, Sam Worthington, I could see that. You know, but that was just, you know, a little vampire connection there. Be looking forward to that one at some point. Any good vampire story is a good one.
And speaking of sequels.
Mm-hmm. Mean Girls 2?
Yep.
Are we... You know, and I know in the show notes I wrote, is this really necessary? Because I came across it. And I was like, really? Really? And I hate it for all of you. I mean, I am a Mean Girls fan. Very much a Mean Girls fan. But Mean Girls 2... You know,
should I feel ashamed that I've never seen it?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, either. You need to see it. You need to see it. Mean Girls is worth
seeing. That sounds like another movie in the future.
Exactly. It's worth seeing. It's definitely worth seeing. It's a cute movie. Tina Fey wrote it. You know, it was her big foray into film. And she did a really good job with it. Even though it has Lindsay in it, you know, it's still a really good movie. But Slash Film had actually had up some information about it. That, for lack of a better term, it sounds like even the plot lines are going to be very similar to the first movie. So it's sort of like, what? Didn't this sound familiar?
Did you like what you had last time? Here's more.
Yeah, exactly.
Same exact thing.
More of the same. But the funny thing is, it did say, though, that this coming weekend, the 26th and 27th, if you're in Atlanta, you can audition for parts in Mean Girls 2. It has the audition information on the link, so that was quite interesting. So any of you potential Damians out there from the movie, you can go audition for parts in the movie. You know, I don't know if any of us would necessarily qualify for the plastics, who were the bad girls, the mean girls. Okay. But, you know, hey. But anyway, for the uber gays out there who enjoy the mean girls phenomenon, Mean Girls 2 in production, I'm not quite sure what to think yet, but it's coming.
And speaking of strange movies.
Oh, good one. Good segue.
Like that, huh? Like that? The first Marvel movie to be released under the Disney moniker will be Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I came across this really minutes before we went started recording, but the funny thing is, I was reading that article about it, and I guess there's going to be a bunch of movies still released under Paramount. I think they still have 4 movies for that deal before anything will be released under Disney. But the comments were cracking me up on this page, so let me put the link up. Definitely check it out, because there's one guy who's talking about, like, you know, we know it's Disney, but Doctor Strange needs to be kinky, psychedelic, and something else. And I was just cracking up because I'm just like, oh my God. So it should be interesting. I never read any of the Doctor Strange comics. From what I hear, though, it would, if this 3D sort of, I don't know if we call it a renaissance that's going on right now, where anything and everything has to be in 3D, that this movie will fit very well into that sort of movie making. So,
who are they talking about for Doctor Strange?
You know, I haven't really heard anything about if they were farming anybody for that role yet. So, it's been kind of in development hell for a while, because I've been hearing little bits and pieces for probably a couple of years now on this movie. So.
Well, definitely something to keep our eyes out for.
Nope.
And who doesn't like a Marvel movie?
True.
Well, everybody's kind of holding their breath with the whole Disney acquisition, so.
Well, you know. I'm feeling, and I could be wrong, but I'm feeling that Disney's going to take a relative hands-off approach when it comes to the Marvel properties and basically put their name up and then rake in the dough.
Yeah, we can hope.
And they really need to do that. And if they do that, they're going to get a lot more money than if they do start to say, well, this is a Disney picture. We got to keep our image clean. So it has to be like this. There's no deaths, blah, blah, blah.
Walt's going to be spinning in his hyperbaric chamber.
Okay, here it is. I knew I saw something about Doctor Strange. The Conan screenwriters were hired to pen Marvel's Doctor Strange. And so it looks like Marvel has hired Conan screenwriters Thomas Donnelly and Joseph Oppenheimer to write the film centered around the Sorcerer Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So I saw that in Slash Film. All right.
Interesting.
Nice. Hey, shall we do this? I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time. Gotta get back in time. First off, we're going to start this show off with Soldier's Girl from 2003? To tell you a little bit about it, we, of course, have the intrepid Griff.
This powerful drama tells the true story of a young soldier, PFC Barry Winchell, played by Troy Garrity, who meets and falls for a beautiful transgendered nightclub performer played by Lee Pace, while on a drunken outing with fellow soldiers. Winchell's relationship is frowned upon by the other soldiers and eventually leads to tragedy at the hands of his homophobic roommate. Garrity and Pace both earned independent spirit nods for their performances.
Directed by Frank Pearson and, as Griff said, starring Troy Garrity and Lee Pace as the soldier and the girl. And also starring Andre Brower, Sean Hatosi.
Hatosi,
thank you. Philip Edels. And Philip Edels. That's who we got. So,
mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's talk about
it. Yeah, I know. It's everybody take a deep breath. It was a super intense movie.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of really cool things about this. Soldier's Girl was also hailed as one of the 10 best television programs of the year in 2003 by the AFI, American Film Institute. This was originally aired on Showtime. Did Showtime contracted it? They wanted to.
I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sure, but I know that it did originally air on Showtime and then hit a little bit of the circuit, a little bit of the film circuit from that point.
It was not.
I mean, more of like the independent kind of film circuit.
Yeah. Well, it was nominated for a ton of awards, including Emmy, GLAAD, Golden Globe, Independent Spirit, among others, and won by Lee Pace, a breakthrough award during the 2003 Gotham Awards and a Peabody Award in 2004. Mm-hmm. So just to show the acclaim of this movie, which I thoroughly think they deserved on this.
Definitely. Definitely. And for those who don't know the background of it, it talks about the real-life murder of Barry Winchell, of course, which is one of the big cases that came up really against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And then also it features the life of Calpurnia Adams, who is a well-known drag queen and performer in the Nashville area, Nashville circuit in Tennessee as state as a whole. And then from there, as she was going through her transition and doing some things, she met Barry, and that's kind of when this all happened. Right. It was 1999, because this year, actually July 4th, just less than a couple weeks from now, is actually the anniversary, 11th anniversary of Private Winchell's death. So it's pretty fresh on, it's pretty accurate. It's a real story. And pretty much from talking, with Calpurnia, or hearing from Calpurnia's, her thoughts on the movie, it's pretty much right out of the news. Pretty much everything that happened is pretty much accurate from it's one of those real stories that really kind of tugs at your heart, going, though, there wasn't a whole lot of liberty taken, right, with this. That's the hard part to hear.
And what base was this supposed to happen on? I it's blanking for me for a second. Was it Fort Campbell?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought. My parents lived in Tennessee for 10 years, and they lived really close to
Clarksville.
Arnold Air Force Base down closer to Huntsville. So,
mm-hmm. So. Yeah, Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Because a lot of people in the Nashville area, I mean, that's a pretty easy commute back and forth. So there's actually a lot of people who come down there from Fort Campbell all the time to Nashville area to go out.
It was a very powerful film. This weekend was I was really pleased with, I thought it was great that the movie focused more on their relationship, like them coming together and them forming their relationship. Then I never seen it before and didn't really know anything about the story. I was kind of worried that it was going to be like the typical kind of like the actual crime happens right away, and then you, it's like, I didn't want it to be a trial movie, basically.
Gotcha.
Which I'm glad it wasn't, you know, so.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not that. I mean, you see it from inception, you know, from the time that Barry Winchell, you know, is trying to decide what he wants to do with his life long term, you know, and then he meets Calpurnia by complete, you know, an utter accident, for lack of a better term, you know, and it kind of, everything kind of ensues from there. And then you see it pretty much up to, you know, the very end, to the point at which charges and everything were processed. So it's definitely the pre-trial. It's everything pre-trial.
Yeah.
You know, and I think one of the cool things is, thanks to Facebook, you know, I mean, I've had connection with her in the past because I'm from the Nashville area. And I just figured, you know, why not let me contact Calpurnia and see if she has any thoughts about it. And one of the response that I got from her was actually very nice. And she was very thankful that people are still talking about the movie and are still interested in the movie. And I let her know that particularly, you know, I wanted to bring a movie that had issues of transgender in it, because, you know, we are celebrating Pride Month. And I wanted to make sure that we had addressed some things in that area. And then also the aspect of don't ask, don't tell. I wanted to make sure that we kind of had hit something kind of universal for everybody to think about. And her response of saying basically, like, you know, go for it, good luck, I just can't talk about it anymore, you know, that she pretty much was very honest and said that, you know, she's trying to move on. She loves knowing people are still talking about it, but at the same time, like, she just can't, you know, she can't talk about the actual movie itself anymore. And that she reflected us to her, her page. She has a full page that we'll link, that talks specifically about all of her reactions and thoughts and walks you through everything. She even has a video of the night that she won Tennessee Entertainer of the Year, which is actually the night that Barry Winchell was murdered. You know, so she it's very in-depth and it's very cool. And, you know, I hope people take the chance to read it and look it over and kind of just keep thoughts in your mind about this is why the issue of don't ask, don't tell is so important. You know, because clearly Barry Winchell could have definitely looked for, you know, his superiors could have looked for some signs that the issues were happening. If Barry had felt comfortable enough, he could have gone to his superiors and said, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm questioning myself. I don't know what's going on, but I'm struggling. There's so much that could have happened if that policy wasn't in effect in this situation. And, you know, but anyway, you know, not to get on a soapbox, but I'm sure, Jeff, you probably have a little more background on that, because I noticed you have a reference here.
Yeah, well, one of the things we did on Cups Out Loud was we actually brought on John from the DADT podcast onto one of our shows. That was actually episode 14, so it was a long ways back. I'm going to have a link in the show notes so people can find out a more current perspective on Dotel versus what they had back in 1999 when all this took place. We need to get rid of this. We don't need it anymore. Actually, we probably never even needed it. And it's just that time. I mean, right now we're making those steps already. There's, House has already voted that to give the go ahead that after the study is complete, yeah, go ahead and get rid of it. Don't ask, don't tell. So they've already kind of approved the appeal once they get to that point, but they have to do this study thing before they'll actually do that, get that taking place. So, I mean, there's steps that we've moved forward. This is just a movie that shows more of how it is. But you know what? Honestly, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I don't think really has much to do with this movie. I mean, there it's a factor. It happens in the movie, but it's really more about homophobia and maybe even just general psychology, because I looked at this more of as, I don't think Barry was gay or bi or anything. He fell in love with a girl. It ends up being an MTF girl, but a girl. So I wouldn't even say that he was gay. But they killed him because his girlfriend was a transgendered person. So,
but I see it in a broader. I hear you completely. I guess I just see it in general that he made some statements in the course of the movie, at least, about, you know, not knowing who he was, and then of course when they actually wound up having sex, you know, that, I mean, it's one of the interesting parts of the movie. Like, he went down on Calpurnia, and this was pre-op.
Right. I remember her saying, you know, she's like, oh, don't go there. Don't ruin it.
Right. So there were these pieces there that, you know, and if you remember, they also have that argument about, he's like, I don't know what I am. And she says to him, you know, well, I'm not here to help you figure that out. You know, basically, like, you need to figure that out. But clearly, Winchell, being in the military, didn't have anyone he was going to talk to about it. Mm-hmm. You know, he couldn't talk to a superior. He couldn't say, I need to talk to a doctor. Can I see a psychologist? Let me talk to my bunkmate. You know, there was nowhere for him to go. So I think that's where the don't ask, don't tell piece comes in, is that, you know, he was trying to figure out who he was. You know, for whatever, what, you know, on that whole, you know, sliding scale of everything that we all are on, you know, he was trying to figure out where he fit into that. You know, and I think that was what the challenge of the situation. That's where I feel like the don't ask, don't tell comes in. And clearly too, you know, ever since the murder, his family, as we know from watching the documentary, after the movie, as well as from reading up on it, that his family has been fighting don't ask, don't tell ever since, and bringing this issue up on the speaking circuit. You know, it's just saying, like, you know, if anything killed him, it was his inability to be able to talk openly with anyone about it. And we don't want this to happen to anyone else in the future.
Right.
You know, in this sense, but what I
would
see.
Would that still have really prevented?
There's still homophobia. There's still going to be homophobia that happens in the military.
Yeah. And I think that this, in my opinion on this movie is that it while Don't Ask, Don't Tell was there and a factor and he had these problems, very much part of the character, that was not the reason for the murder. It was a pure, homophobia thing, because you know what? These guys knew who he was dating,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they knew flat out. So it can't be a don't ask, don't tell thing, because he essentially already told.
Well, and there's all kinds of questions, too. If you look into the background of the story, there's all kinds of questions, too, about his roommate, Fisher. You know, and there's all kinds of questions about, like, Fisher was the one that talked to them to going to the drag bar connection, which is more like a ginormous complex back then. It was like three different bars. There was a country bar, a performance bar, and a dance bar. You know, it was like this huge world of gay back in the day, right on the Columbia River.
Probably similar to the gay 90s in Minneapolis.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, I've been there several times, but I just remember the look of the place anyway. But for, I mean, his roommate was the one who apparently talked them into going there in the first place. His roommate is the one that constantly was talking about it, the issue. So there's been lots of questions and speculations as to whether or not Fisher himself, was the one who was really questioning, you know, and so when you see that Barry Winchell is kind of figuring out who he is while Fisher is still struggling with who he is, you know, that he takes his anger and angst out on Barry. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you don't want to see somebody else successfully be able to navigate who they are when you're in the struggle yourself.
Right. Well, so, you know what? Not his roommate, but the guy who actually murdered him,
mm-hmm.
Calvin or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
If that dude was just, there's something wrong with him. I mean,
he had anger issues.
Even more than anger issues, that boy needed mental help.
I think Fisher also needed help too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they both needed help, and they were drunk off their asses, and the kid was underage,
mm-hmm.
too. So, I mean, there was a lot of bad things mixed up there that caused this tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I didn't watch the documentary afterwards. Maybe I should have, but Fisher, I mean, he was sentenced for obstruction of justice, alcohol to a minor.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the obstruction of justice part come in? I mean, did they explain that at all in the documentary, or?
No, I think he was pled down, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
There was some pleading involved there because he got 12 and a half years. Right. Whereas Calvin got life.
Life.
So there's been a lot to it.
I mean, it was just that whole watching those two. I mean, I have plenty of friends, plenty of people that I went to high school with that I went into all different parts of the armed forces, you know, and, you know, all of them have come back to me with tales of, you know, not everybody in the armed forces this way, but there are some individuals in there that it's like, wow, they really need some help, because there are definitely some people with some anger issues and some other deep-seated issues in the armed forces. And it's really unfortunate. It's like kind of like the perfect storm of circumstances, mm-hmm. that, you know, kind of led up to this. And the commanding officer, I think he's an MP or whatever, the one that was leading them in the march there.
Mm-hmm. Diaz?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was like the most disturbing. I mean,
wasn't Diaz. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that wasn't Diaz that was doing that one. I remember. The white guy.
Yeah, he was like on a witch hunt. And
oh my God, he just wanted to murder anybody who he absolutely found out was the truth. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he would have somehow either committed the murder or did something to completely destroy Barry's life, mm-hmm. Militarily wise, at least. If not some other way, because he, I mean, that was like a strong sense of homophobia for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost felt like, while watching that movie, that he was going to be the culprit.
Right. Well, I didn't know anything about the story. Didn't know who actually had murdered him before I watched it. So, I mean, yeah, for me, it was kind of like I kept, you know, at first I was like, it's totally going to be his roommate. And then when this guy got on the witch hunt, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's going to be the one who does it. And then, you know, it was like I kept jumping back and forth between, you know, it's like, oh my God. It was just, it was unreal. It was unreal. It was.
Well, and I wanted to back up a little bit to your point, Buzz, about, you know, a lot of people go into the military, you know, when they're 17, 18 years old, you know, and what we know from Erickson, Piaget, all this developmental theory about people growing up, you know, their formative years are really those years right after they leave home, mm-hmm. you know, as far as when they're developing. And so it doesn't surprise me that people, you know, they're figuring out who they are once they become independent, you know, and that 18 to 22 range is when a lot of us develop our own independence, our own ideas, our own this, because we're finally away from the family. We're finally figuring out who we are. All that kind of stuff. So there's a ton of this kind of internal struggle going on between people, or you know, and if they don't have the ability to talk to somebody about it, or you know, are forced to be in this mold of the military at times, you know, you can't, you really can't explore who you really, really are. You know, you just get it repressed. You know, and I mean, I can speak to it firsthand, very minutely, because I was in Army ROTC in school, in college. I started in Army ROTC. I left it after my sophomore year because of just, I changed majors and they wouldn't scholarship me anymore and all that kind of stuff. But I remember, you know, going into doing all this stuff and having to fill out all the paperwork. This was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, and it, having to say, like, are you a conscientious objector? And you have to say yes or no on the paperwork. Are you a homosexual? Yes or no? You know, and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, you're 18. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, I'm like, at least at that time, we didn't know. You know, like, sometimes we, you know, because, I don't know, it was a challenge. I just remember reading that question as a freshman going into college going, how am I supposed to be able to answer this question? You know what I mean? Like, and then, you know, and I can remember my own little issue that I had, because that was also the time at which there was a lot of controversy about state funds going to the military, at least on college campuses, because there were a lot of protests by the gay student organizations and others about state school funds going to ROTC programs, mm-hmm. because they were clearly, they weren't open to everybody, you know, and that kind of thing. And I remember going to a rally, and I happened to be in uniform that day because they had it on the day we had field training. And I remember stopping there and listening and, you know, and seeing some other people from ROTC walking by and just being like, why are you there? And, you know, and then like about 2 weeks later, getting called in by my captain to say, like, why were you there? You know what I mean? And those are the kinds of things that stick in your brain, you know, and I mean, I got my butt chewed out mm-hmm. for stopping and listening to the, you know, to the information that was being shared, you know, and stuff. And it was quite an interesting, you know, so just that just being my little piece. And I do remember there was a lesbian that came out during the course, and she was a senior, and, you know, she was stripped of everything and sent packing.
No.
You know, so I can, I mean, just, that's just my little glimpse, you know, let alone, I mean, and I, that's a very limited view of a very limited experience, but, you know, it stuck with me for 20 years, you know, almost, not quite, almost 20 years. It's like, I'm aging myself there, but, you know, but when you go to watch something like this and you think this is what happened after the expansion, you know, things were open a little bit more with the don't ask, don't tell policy. And you see situations like this, you know, this isn't the only situation like this that's happened.
Yeah. Well, I find it funny to say that things are more open. I don't think that's that they're open. It's just, it's like,
I meant the door is open. I mean, maybe that's
big, it's just the big 800 pound gorilla that everybody sweeps under the carpet, really.
Yeah.
You know, Don't ask us about it. Don't tell us about it. You know what I mean? We're not going to ask you. Don't tell us.
Yep.
And we like it that way.
Yeah. But on the positive end of everything, although she didn't really use this as a platform at all, I don't feel it, at least. But Calpurnia is successful. She's happy. You know, she's doing all kinds of cool stuff out in LA now. You know, she's been on a lot of different, you know, talk shows. And she's also, you know, she's had her own series on Logo, Transamerican Love Story. She's been in several documentaries, and she was in Transamerica. If you remember the point where I think they stop in Oklahoma, where, and there's a group of transgender people who are in a house together and someone's playing the fiddle. Mm-hmm. Like that's Calpurnia. Oh, okay. Playing the fiddle. She's an accomplished fiddle master, virtuoso, what have you. So but she's been in a lot of that, and she's continuing in her process of, you know, trying to become a well-known established actor in Hollywood. So but still, she has not ridden the wave of success for this.
Oh no.
But you know, it's not like that at all.
I found it interesting because I was reading her webpage a little earlier, and you know, she sat on this for like 2 years mm-hmm. because she was afraid that people would think that she was trying to ride the wave of this in order to further her own career. So it was a lot of, you know, she went around and asked all of her friends and family members that she still, you know, people that she considered her family, you know, what would you do? You know, she really, really, you know, mulled this over for quite a long time before deciding, yes, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, be attached to this project in any way, shape, or form. So once she was finally convinced that the people doing this movie were not doing it to, you know, be sensationalist or something like that, that, you know, she was on board. So yeah, it's pretty clearly spelled out on her webpage. And the other thing I found interesting, especially after, you know, you reached out to her and she sent that response back to us, was there's a section on there talking about, like, if, you know, if you ever happen to meet her in person and you've seen the movie or whatever, to just please, not that she doesn't say not to talk about it, but unless you're somebody who knows her well, or you're, it has something to do with the activity you're involved with as far as activism or something, she's like, it really kind of, you know, it really tugs at her to really talk about this. And, you know, she really struggles with, you know, it's not that she wants to forget that it happened, but, you know, it's a very personal story, obviously. And she said a lot of people tend to kind of,
It's not a movie she wrote.
Right.
It's her life.
It's her life.
Yeah.
And people sometimes tend to forget that, and they tend to treat it as like it was just kind of like a movie of the week sort of thing, and, you know, trivialize it in some way, or, you know, maybe not intentionally, but, you know, she said she's really tired. You know, people would bring it up just in small talk at a party or something when they're talking about the movie. And for her, it's something that's really hard to hear and deal with. So I thought that was really interesting. But I thought it was a very powerful movie. I would recommend this to almost anybody to see. It's not something I had ever heard of until Steve recommended we watch it. So. I would definitely say if you have the opportunity, go out and watch it.
And I would agree. I mean, clearly, you know, what made me think of this was I had seen it a while ago, and, you know, shortly after it came out, and it made me think, I'm like, oh, this needs to be, you know, a broader audience needs to see this at some point. And so that's one of the things that when I was thinking about what we were doing for this month, that's what made me think I was recommending something completely different. And then I was like, oh, no, we have to see this. This is the perfect timing. Do you know, as far as like in just where we are in our development and everything. And, you know, and so I definitely encourage everybody to see it, see what it's about, but just be ready to cry, be ready to be left thinking about it, you know, talk to people about it. You know, it's relevant now as it was right after it came out. You know, especially with all of the conversations that we're having now about what's going on with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and, you know, and things of that nature.
What about you, Jeff?
I agree. It's definitely a must see. How much I like the movie? I think it's something I think everybody should see. Did I like the movie that great? I thought it was fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a rental. I can't see this sitting in my movie collection. Something that I would watch over and over again. I'm not sure if I'll ever watch it again. So, but definitely check it out if you can.
Well, and truthfully, I still struggle over Lee Pace's performance. You know, I mean, he won all these awards and notoriety and breakthrough and all that such. But at the same time, I didn't feel him in that role for some reason. As Calpurnia, you know, so I mean, I can't figure out who would be better. Do you know what I mean? So I'm glad that he got the accolades that he did, but and he did good for what he brought to the table. But at the same time, I kept thinking, I'm like, is there someone else that could have done this better? You know, and but I, you know, he was coached by her pretty much through the movie, so clearly, you know, he did well. So. But those are some of the pieces that I struggle with. I mean, yeah, as far as the acting goes, as far as the movie went and all that stuff, if it were just a story movie, it might not have been this amazing film. It's not really that, but I think it's when you put it in perspective of what it stands for and the bigger
the bigger issues is why I put it as a must-see. Mm-hmm. You know? But, yeah.
Excellent. And that is Soldier Scroll. And this is this. I think like a week or two ago, I had mentioned this next movie, and I think it's like, you know, I don't really want to see that movie. Not as bad as I'll never see it, like, I, you know, but if somebody's there, it's the movie's there, great, I'll watch it, but I don't want to see it. And it ended up being Get Him to the Greek. Griff, tell us a little bit about it.
Ambitious young record company intern Aaron Green will let nothing get in the way of his planned rise to the top in the music business. Not even the unruly rock star he must escort to Los Angeles for the start of his anniversary concert. Doing whatever it takes to get the rocker from point A to point B, Aaron encounters all manners of mishaps in this comedy directed by Nicholas Stoller and produced by Judd Apatow.
So, Steve, you picked this week's movies. Did you do that on purpose?
No. truth be told, I had some friends that wanted to see this movie, and so I said, sure, I'll go with. And it was a new release, and it was out there and stuff like that. And so I figured I'm going to see it. So I'm like, I'm going to drag the rest of you to it too as well.
So directed by Nicholas Stoller, starring Jonah Hill, Russell Brand, Rose Byrne, and Sean Combs, also known as Diddy or P. Diddy or Puff Daddy or whatever he's going by now. I think he's just going by Diddy right now. I could be wrong on that.
Right, true.
I'm going to flat out start off by saying what I thought about this movie. I liked it. I didn't think I'd like this movie, but I actually liked the movie.
Yeah, I'm looking at your recommendation where you say, good movie, worth a full. Worth a...
Did I miss this? I think that's worth full price.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right.
So definitely worth going to see at a theater like the Alamo Drafthouse. I know, I name drop. I liked the movie. It was good. I mean, this isn't one of those greatest movies in all the world, but for a comedy, something that's just fun, enjoyable to watch, it was. I mean, I had plenty of those moments that everybody knows about. My friend Craig, who I ended up seeing it with, knows how many times that I ducked down into my seat, covered my ears, and closed my eyes. So it did have those embarrassing moments, like moments.
Therapy. If any of our listeners out there want to offer therapy to Jeff,
but I
call
was
us. Actually,
I had seen this movie enough, or I actually watched more of the movie than I thought I would actually watch because of this. I really like the music. The music was was fun. Was in fact, I bought the soundtrack.
Even African Child.
It was on the album. I just bought it. Okay. But yeah, so Russell Brand stars as Aldous Snow, who had a great career. Then he put out this crap ass album called African Child. He was sober for most of that time, and then after African Child and it completely bombed, went totally non-sober. And then eventually they pick up with it, Aaron Green, played by Jonah Hill, suggesting to help pick up sales for the record company he works for by doing an anniversary concert at the Greek Theater, which was supposedly one of the biggest, which was a sold out or one of the biggest concerts ever, and bring him back to do an anniversary one. So
I've just come to realize, I know one of the reasons you probably like this movie is because the big known drug cocktail in this movie is called Jeffrey.
Has nothing to do with that.
Had nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Nothing, because they spell it wrong.
Oh, okay. because they just kept saying Jeffrey and Jeffrey and Jeffrey and Jeffrey and Jeffrey all through this movie. And I was like, I love this movie.
I gotta say, that scene, I know we're skipping to relatively late in the movie, but actually, it was more in the middle of the movie. That scene with Aldous and his dad, played by O'Brien.
Yeah, O'Brien from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, Colm Meaney.
We're there. They have this Jeffrey. He takes a toke off of it, and then he starts having a heart attack. Whether he was actually having a heart attack, we don't know, because all this basically took him up a little flight of stairs in the room and had him start stroking the furry wall. And through that entire thing, there he is. Aaron's just stroking that wall over and over again, and insanity breaks out through the rest of it in the rest of the room. And all this comes up, and when he's up there talking to Aaron, he's stroking the wall, and then Diddy comes up, he's wide-eyed, you know, totally high off this Jeffrey, and he just comes up and he starts quickly stroking the wall like no one told him to stroke the wall. But he's stroking this furry wall, and he just comes up there, and he's just standing up there straight upright, and then his hand's just over there stroking the furry wall. And I have to say, it's oh my God, it was so funny. Mm-hmm. I love that. That was my favorite scene in the movie. Well, it's stroking the furry wall.
I do have a question for you guys, because in my research post this movie, was when I found out that it was a sequel, actually, for those who don't know, it was a sequel to Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Now, I have not yet to see Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and that's probably my bad, but I'm just curious, like, do either of you see that movie, and was it really a sequel?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. I don't think anybody that I saw it with had seen that movie. So I don't think it was really that... wasn't like anything, I don't know, other than maybe having the same character.
Okay.
In two movies.
Okay. Well, I shouldn't say sequel is the wrong word. I should say spinoff. Right. Yeah. It's the, you know, it's definitely the facts of life to Archie Bunker or, you know, or whatever the, you know, like it's the, not Archie Bunker, Different Strokes.
Yes.
You know, it's the Jeffersons to Archie Bunker. You know, it's one of those. It's not, so it's not that it's necessarily, it just used the same characters. But I mean, there's a ton of stuff out there about it. You know, I find it quite interesting, you know, that they actually did film a lot of the movie during live action stuff. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the concert footage was filmed while Russell Brand was actually on his comedy tour. So his fans got into it. You know, we learned that the interviews with Pink and Christina Aguilera, for example, were filmed when he was hosting the MTV Movie Awards. So, I mean, so they did a lot of interesting stuff to get some interesting footage. I thought that was kind of neat. You know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You may as well use your time wisely. You know, that kind of stuff. And I do have to say, Rose Byrne, who played Jackie Q in this movie, she was funny. She was funny. And then the girlfriend, or Jonah Hill's girlfriend.
Daphne.
Oh, my God. Funny. Just her delivery on some things was just so deadpan.
You know, and I recognize her, and I can't remember what I recognize her from.
I'm not sure, but all I know is that there were some moments that she had my favorite moments, other than the one line that I have looked at when Jonah Hill had the prostitute over him, and she was just like, she's like, I you know, they were talking about landscaping down below, and then she was just like, I have mine in the shape of a microphone, want to sing some karaoke? And I was like, oh my God, she really said that.
I thought the movie was okay. I don't know, maybe it's just me showing my age, But I mean, I had two problems with this movie. One was I just wanted to slap Aldous Snow's character, be like, you know what? We're paying you ungodly amounts of money to come to this show. Get your ass in gear and get to, you know, didn't have any patience for him whatsoever. And whole thing with Jonah Hill and his girlfriend, their whole, like, it was like, oh yeah, we're broken up. And then I practically like cut scene and like pretty much he's screwing some chick in a bathroom. I'm like, really?
Yeah, right.
Really? I'm like, wow, he doesn't waste any time.
Well, you know, and I'm going to be prude cub yet again in this movie and just say that one of the things that I have learned I don't really care for are movies that are laden completely with drug references all throughout them. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the occasional, but with, like, when they're high the entire movie or drunk the entire movie or is talking about take this drug, do as whatever. I lose interest very quickly on that. Mm-hmm. You know, for reasons, but anyway, but for the point, my point just being like, I was like, do we really have to sit through an hour and a half of drugs? You know, drug reference movie? You know, and that was just one of those things that I was just kind of like, eh. Because as y'all know, it led to poor decision making. It led to a lot of puking on screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it led to a lot of those things. And I was just like, like you said, the stuff about him, you know, being with a prostitute immediately in the bathroom right after he had broken up with his girlfriend. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And I was like, and then the whole adrenaline shot thing, you know.
That was hysterical.
Yeah, it was funny. The scene was funny. But I'm just
like, okay, I'm going to take this adrenaline needle and put it right into your heart. It's like, it's one of those things where he's high and he's just remembering Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, well, and so it really, to me, was just essentially a reference to that and then making a joke off of it because he's got all that adrenaline is running around and running around and running around. It's just all hyper. I think the reason for the drug references in this movie made sense to me because it's supposed to be an exaggeration of maybe not even an exaggeration of that rock star lifestyle, you know. Keith Richards hasn't died yet. It's amazing.
Right.
You know,
no, you're right. You're
why
right.
Why is Keith Richards still alive? Well, I mean, it's just one of those things where the rock star lifestyle is supposed to be you're drunk and high all the time, you know, and that's just it. The movie is putting an exaggeration to that and showing how using that it's really difficult to control the star because he's doing all these things. And yeah. I went to slap Aaron several times. there was that point where he says, "What song would you like to do for the Today Show?" She says, "I don't know. What would you like to do?" Well, the clap was amazing. He says, "What about African Child? We're going to do African Child." I would have been at that point as Aaron says, "Look, don't get me wrong. African Child is great, okay? But what we want to do is actually get excitement for these people. We want them to get them." Rolling and just really, really excited about this show. So we need something higher energy. And that's where the clap comes in versus African Child, which is more slow or mellower song than the clap. I would have totally started doing something like that. And then he might go, yeah, let's do that. Well, although knowing Aldous from this movie, he'd be like, no, let's do African Child.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course... he doesn't remember the lyrics to African Child and does the clap anyways.
Hey, you know, that I can relate to. I have actually been in a situation like that, but where I used to be in a band a long time ago, and I've been in a show where the singer's just like, I can't remember any of the words. It's like, yeah, what?
I've had microphone amnesia as well, so I understand. Just make it up.
I'm curious because when you guys went to see this, what was the mix of the audience? Was it younger, older?
There were like six people in the theater.
Okay.
See it, so hard to say.
What about you, Jeff? Jeff?
Did we lose Jeff?
Did we lose Jeff?
Uh-oh. Well, I know, right? Are we continuing to...
No, I was muted. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was like, okay. Are we continuing to record?
No, I had to quickly run Pete. But anyway.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay.
So, where was I? Okay. I couldn't tell.
Are you okay?
I was actually more focused on waiting for my friend who ended up appearing right when the movie started. He missed all of the trailers before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he arrived essentially right on time. So I was paying attention, trying looking for him and watching for him I didn't pay too much attention. So I think it was more, late 20s to 30s people, maybe some people in the 40s. I don't think there was much younger than that.
Mm-hmm.
So
he should have come and you guys should have saw it in my theater. Cause there were, shit you not, 17 minutes worth of trailers.
Wow.
17 minutes worth of trailers. Good Lord.
17 minutes. Yeah. We actually timed it. Cause we're like, oh my God, this is taking forever. But, the crowd in the show that I went to was very mixed. There was actually two or three older couples, and by older, my guess, just by looking at them, was maybe in their mid to late 50s, which kind of surprised me. I didn't expect to see that mixed of a crowd. The theater was actually wasn't crowded, but it wasn't empty. There was probably 25 or 30 people in the theater. The audience seemed to enjoy it. There were parts of it that I enjoyed, the parts that I laughed at. I thought Sean Combs was hilarious.
Oh my God.
Every time he was on screen, he cracked me up.
He did a good job.
Yeah.
And so did Meredith Vieira, by the way.
Yes.
She was funny.
But yeah, every time he was on screen, I was laughing. And
again, the Cirque de Furry Walls thing.
Yes. My friend that I saw it with, he enjoyed it a lot more than me. He was laughing nonstop pretty much through the whole movie. It had funny points. I almost think that this movie would be much more enjoyable as a rental. Maybe with a group of friends,
it's a party movie.
Hanging out, drinking with some buddies, watching it, got a little bit of buzz going, being able to talk about it while it's going on, not having to worry about, making anybody mad.
Drink every time they say African child.
Yeah. But
every time they say the word perfect. Jeffrey, every Jeff. Time they say Jeffrey or every time they say
Jeffrey,
the
yeah. Definitely, this would be definitely a good drinking game movie.
We could call it Get Him to the Drunk.
Oh, yes.
Oh, sweet.
How's that? Thank you.
All right, so we got Greek, African child, and puking.
Jeffrey.
How about that?
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, puking. someone starts stroking the wall.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I can't get off
the clap.
That part. The
cloud. Yeah. Oh gosh. Okay. But on the serious end of this, but the performance in the movie, can I please get Russell Brand to open his damn mouth? I got so frustrated throughout the entire movie. Everything was talked like this through his teeth. He talked through his teeth the entire movie.
Colonel Kella.
Russell, open your mouth. Enunciate.
Well,
oh my God.
Again, rock star. I mean, does Keith Richards open his mouth?
I know, it's true.
I'm sorry.
Maybe it's like...
The analogy here is Keith Richards. Just say Keith Richards, and you got it made.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was the meth. The clench. He had the jaw clench. going on, but I don't know. I just needed him to open his mouth.
Speaking of meth, and I think it's funny because you actually—I don't know if Jeff put this in here or not—but the little thing in here about thinking the movie was really choppy. Yes, in fact, audibly, my friend goes, like, more than once we were sitting there watching it, and he'd go, "Wow, that was a really rough cut." Like,
okay, good. I'm glad I wasn't the only crazy person. I did too.
No, I didn't notice it at all.
I kind of just noticed that it was like it would go from this scene to this scene to this scene, and I was like, I felt like there was more to talk about. I thought they were going to go a little bit further and then stop and go to the next scene. I'm like, oh, I just right.
There were a couple of them that it was almost like, I mean, the cut was even sort of like almost like there might have been more. Like it was like accidental. Like, oh, we cut the scene there for whatever reason. Like somebody was talking and. Yeah, it was rough in spots. I thought that was kind of strange. I don't.
Maybe nobody will figure it out. Okay, exactly. Just kind of moving right along.
Well, yeah, when I saw that in the notes, I thought that was funny because literally like out loud, I was like, wow, that's a really rough cut. That was a bad cut.
Yeah, this movie's not going to win any awards. I mean, if it won an award, it would be something to do with like an original song for a movie, but that's about it. And I doubt it will even get that. As much as I'd like the soundtrack for this. But, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really notice the choppy cuts. Yeah. Maybe I just felt it was part of the style of the film or something. I don't know.
True.
It's just crazy.
I don't know. I think it'll do well with the MTV Movie Award set. So.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, this is totally an MP3 movie. Or MP3? Yeah. MTV movie.
So
yeah, I've moved on from music television to music audio files.
So what did we learn, folks?
All right, definitely learned a few things in this. Drug references and a lot of puke does not make a great movie. P. Diddy can actually be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You can shape your bunny hair into just about anything. Microphone, karaoke. And if life slips you a Jeffrey, stroke the furry walls. Oh, one comment I have on this is, why the hell couldn't they have Jonah Hill take off his damn shirt? I mean, they go into this three-way thing, and Aldis has his shirt off, but Aaron doesn't have his. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know.
Don't know.
I think I hate the whole thing of sex with his shirt on. I'm like, take the damn shirt off.
Good point.
It just gets in the way.
Well, overall, though, I have to say, it just I could go on living life without ever seen this movie. Just wasn't my thing. I had fun at the movie, but in retro, I was kind of like, meh, I can't really recommend this to anybody. I wouldn't really think it's one of those things that I would see again.
Yeah, I guess I would have to really know the person. If somebody asked me, hey, is this movie we're seeing? I'd really have to know the person well enough to know if they would enjoy it, because...
Go see Toy Story 3, which we're talking about next week.
Yes, so, go see Toy Story 3.
So this is just kind of seems ironic, odd, strange to me. But the fact that out of the three of us, I think I'm the one who liked this movie the most. Yeah, I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie. Not going to win any awards or anything. But it was very enjoyable, and I really think it was worth paying full price in a theater for. If you wait for it, that's fine. Not necessarily you must see in the theater right now. Is it Alamo level? Yeah, because it's enjoyable to have food.
So viewers, listeners out there, who do you agree with? Give us your feedback.
Yes.
COLmovies@gmail.com.
Which we'll get to at the end of the show. But first, before we do that, we have make sure I press the right button.
There's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon.
what was started out to be a trilogy, from my understanding, and ended up being a quadrilogy. Yes, folks, we're not talking about Aliens. We're talking about Resident Evil and the new one, Resident Evil Afterlife. Of course, starring Mia Jovovich as Alice. Also, Ali Larter, Wentworth Miller, and Sienna... I can't pronounce that last name. Gilroy.
Yeah. Wentworth Miller.
So before I watched this trailer, I actually quickly rented the last movie, Extinction, which was supposed to be kind of the end of the trilogy. The apparent trilogy. Was it a demo or did I listen to the... I forgot how I found out about that. Oh, I was listening to the commentary track on the DVD of Extinction. And now they're making a fourth movie. So I didn't mention anything about... It was one of those things where at the end of Extinction, I could totally see there's going to be another movie to kind of wrap this up. Even though they said originally trilogy, but it's not a trilogy. It's because they had the first one was supposed to be a prequel to Resident Evil. The second one was just something.
The virus has spread. Yeah, the virus is spreading
during the reign of the games, but. And then one was kind of after the game was after the games when with that complete waste.
Right. Everybody is affected except for Alice, basically. Right.
Right. Exactly. Some few survivors.
What we learned though from doing a little bit of research is though that Afterlife was the original name of Extinction's movie. Resident Evil 3 was originally Afterlife, but for some reason it became Extinction. Maybe in the middle of that, they decided that they were going to do the fourth installment or something. I mean, there's no telling. We'd have to do some more research to find that out. But that's probably one reason that they changed the title, because I think Afterlife was always expected to be the last film, whatever that means. So I don't know if we'll see. I think the thing I'm most looking forward to is apparently the 3D is supposed to be, you know, freaking fantastic in this, and they're using, the Fusion camera system, you know, which is supposed to be the absolute best 3D out there.
That was the Avatar. The Avatar system?
Yeah, yeah. James Cameron's personal system, the one he keeps in his house. That was using Avatar, so apparently it's going to be like the big, you know, they're bringing out the Mac Daddy of all 3D camera systems to make this movie. So hopefully it'll be pretty cool. I'm glad to see Ali Larter in it. I think she's good as Claire. I like her. And then Wentworth Miller is her brother.
I liked the trailer. The trailer had two things going for it for me, which was I love Mila, and the marketing department used a perfect circle as the music in the background. So I was like, that's cool. I'm really kind of, I don't know, the whole 3D thing, it's cool. I just hope, I get a really bad feeling in the back of my head that this is going to be one of those movies that they kind of do the 3D pandering thing where there's going to be tons of shots with, you know, things flying towards the camera. Yeah. And
the head is going to explode toward you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're going to throw some Chinese stars at the camera. So, you know what I mean? It's like that stuff I'm just kind of over. I'm like, to me, I'd rather, like, Avatar, yes. Avatar, when you saw it in 3D, it was great, but they didn't do anything out of the ordinary to, like, play up the fact that it was in 3D other than the camera movements and all that stuff were kind of set up to play off the whole artificial depth of field that the 3D creates, you know. So, again, I'm kind of worried that they're kind of upselling this whole, you know, 3D thing. I'm also hoping that this doesn't fall into the even odd curse that the Star Trek movies did, because I liked the first one. I absolutely hated the second one. And I liked Extinction only because I thought it was kind of cool that they were sort of, with Extinction, breaking away from from the codecs of the video game. There wasn't a whole lot from the video game in Extinction, you know, other than it being set in the same universe. The only Resident Evil game, honestly, that I've actually played through and actually done any time in is Code Veronica from 2000. So 10 years ago is the last time I played a Resident Evil game. So the whole video game aspect really doesn't do anything for me whatsoever, you know. So I don't know. Yeah, I'll probably see it. I don't know if I'd go see it in the theater unless you guys pick it and make me go see it in the theater. But
yeah, I'm going to.
I would see it. Yeah, I'll go see it in the theater because I want to see how it looks.
Well, one thing I kind of hope they do, because it's one of those movies where I'm not sure if where they're just going to do, like, one part of the trailer has me throwing out some throwing stars directly at the screen, mm-hmm. and that's totally a gimmick.
Right.
And I know just from watching that, I'm like, yeah, we're totally going to see that in 3D. It's supposed to be like, oh, we're going to be attacked by throwing stars type of thing. It's coming right out at us because it's all 3D. Mm. I hate those type of things.
Yeah.
If it ends up being that way as really part of the storyline, it just kind of ends up like that. Sure, great. You know, like an explosion where everything goes in every direction. And, well, you're filming in 3D, so it's got to be going towards you. I mean, that's fine. That's not a gimmick to me. That's an explosion in a 3D movie. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering how this will look if they release it so that there you've got the option of 3D or 2D in the theaters. Because, like, Avatar 3D was very much more about just doing a little more. It was a very subtle 3D. You know, they didn't do that so that they could have those gimmicky little things for 3D.
Right. I think the whole point of the 3D in Avatar was to help immerse you.
Right.
In,
it was
in the world.
It allowed that immersion, which was a great, great use of it. So, but I could also see watching the movie being perfectly fine in 2D. It just, all it did was add that level of immersion. Did I feel like watching Avatar in 3D was worth it? Yes, I do. That immersion was great and it really did add to the film. I want to see this movie while there are these gimmicks. I mean, throwing stars at the screen, you know, if they were doing this 3D, they would probably still have that. Because they're probably doing a POV from her targets.
Yeah, that's what it's very much. It's a video game movie, so we got to remember that.
So I'm just hoping that there isn't a bunch of like the 3D is. They use the 3D and just have all these gimmicks saying, "Oh, it's 3D. We need to do this. We need to do that. We need to have them reach out and for you." I don't want it to be gimmicky, but if it fits into the story. And it just kind mm-hmm. of ends up being cool, like those throwing stars. Sure, it's going to work great. And actually, and looking at this, I'm really excited. I am a little iffy on whether it's going to be a good movie.
Right.
And, you know, and
you're playing to the point that I brought up, which is I totally put up there Resident Evil Overkill. You know, I'm like... I really enjoyed the first movie. I'm like you, Fuzz. The second movie was a little wah-wah for me, but third movie got me really excited again, and I enjoyed it, but I thought it was over.
Right. You know, I mean, I didn't.
I realized that they always leave it open. You know what I mean? But I was kind of hoping it was over because I enjoyed it.
No, seriously, when I watched Extinction and then you see all of those Alice-i,
yeah.
That was Alice's, Alice-i.
Alice's.
The Alice's. I knew. And I mean, she said to the other people of the Umbrella Corporation, "I'm coming after you." Mm-hmm. She didn't use deep voice or anything. But but I knew that this, I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. A whole bunch of Alice clones. Taking down the Umbrella Corporation and really kind of ending this whole thing. I mean, that's kind of, in my opinion, the goal of Resident Evil is taking down that that's the end, is taking down the Umbrella Corporation. And the ending of Extinction didn't satisfy that to me. It's like, sure, we took out this one little place, but we know there's more, and we need it to be taken care of. And we need an ending to it. And that wasn't an ending. That was an ending to that story. But okay, then I got all excited about what's next. Is it overkill? I don't think so. I mean, it really should start getting to an end. Don't get me wrong. But the Extinction story got me excited for Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I just don't want it to turn into Saw.
Yeah, you know, I'm not looking for a Resident Evil 21, you know.
Right.
I mean, there's got to be an end to the story, and they spread it out. They really have spread it out of where each, you know, where these movies fit into the world of the games, because they're separate, because they're separate stories based in the exact same world.
Mm-hmm.
And well, Resident Evil games could go on and on because everybody just likes playing games, and that story part doesn't necessarily matter as much. The movies need to come to an end at some point. And I think they're getting to that with Alice taking down the Umbrella Corporation for good, maybe finding a cure, mm-hmm, which sure, could end the zombie apocalypse. So
they'll just switch to Chris Redfield and make another 4 movies, so you'll have a different main character,
right?
Like they do in the games, or maybe they'll do maybe we'll get, you know, that Mortal Kombat proof of concept. Maybe we'll get a Mortal Kombat Resident Evil crossover. Yeah, there you go.
Is it Mortal Evil or Resident Kombat?
You take your pick.
Mortal Kombat, yeah. Resident Evil.
Yeah, right.
Or Resident Evil, Mortal Kombat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't want to come off like I'm not a fan. I'm very much a fan of the series. But, you know, it's like, but I'm also one of those people who want it to die out at a height. I don't want it to die out just because I don't want it to have a slow death, you know, just because they wanted to put it a movie in 3D. Mm. That's my only concern.
And when they do things such as like the first movie, where they end the movie with Mia Jovovich half naked with a shotgun,
like, you know, right? That's an obvious.
You know, there's going to be some of the. I've got to say, it's one of my friends her sister saw the Phantom Menace first, and she said, "Want to know the end of the movie?" She goes, "No," and then she goes, "He hands him the ball." and at that point, then I saw Resident Evil after she told me that story, and I called her up on my cell phone, and I go, Rachel, what? Mia Jovovich half naked with the shotgun? What? Mia Jovovich half naked with the shotgun? I mean, I don't know about you, but I thought that was just one of the coolest endings to a movie ever. And it is quite possible that while it perfectly set it up for a sequel, I could have totally seen them just, you know, put that, never make another Resident Evil movie after that. Because, yeah, you know, ending the movie series with Mia Jovovich half naked with a shotgun, just, it's a great image.
Is it one of the great movie images of all time? Is that what you're trying to say? We need to call AFI.
Something like that. Anyways, all I can say is I'm a sucker for bad movies. So I'm totally going to see this. And if Steven doesn't pick it, I'm going to pick it. So we are going to see this movie later on. So we're going to do, I don't know if it'll be our first, but it will definitely be one that we're going to end up seeing. That we've already reviewed the trailer on. So.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I don't have a problem going to see it. It's just, in fact, like I said, I love Mila. I'll go see pretty much any movie that she's in. It's just one of those things. It's like, it's one of those kind of like Get Him to the Greek. I wouldn't go out of my way to see it. You know, might be one of those things where it had been out for a few weeks and maybe they're showing it. You know, you can get tickets for $5 or whatever to go see it. Then I might go see it. But it's not a first runner for me usually. And I don't know. I like I said, I hope it just doesn't fall into the even odd curse so far for me. So
and I trust me, I'm a sucker for a bad. I've seen every B flick horror movie that's out there, even some like D flick horror movies out
Color
there.
Color Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh my Mentos, god, I've seen worse. I've seen worse than Killer Clowns. Yeah, I run it all. So trust that I'm not afraid of seeing a bad movie. But I don't think this is going to be a bad movie. Like I've liked the franchise. I enjoy the franchise. I'm looking forward to it. I just don't want to walk away from this movie going, "Oh my god, why did they have to make a fourth one?" You know, so I'm definitely looking forward to it. I feel as though in my mind I'm hoping it's going to be the last one because I don't want to see Resident Evil Overkill. That's just my bottom line on it. So yeah. I have a lot of faith in this. I have a lot of faith in this that it's going to be a good one because I do enjoy I enjoy me some kick-ass female movies. So I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Coming attractions, I think we're at right now. Coming attractions next week because we're going to slip you a Jeffrey in the past.
Stroke the furry walls.
You know, when you first sent out that email that's what we're going to see, I thought you were joking.
No.
I thought I'm like, okay, he's so hung up on that whole scene that we're going to see what?
No, I do have to say that I got the soundtrack and I keep playing Furry Walls over and over and it's stuck in my head. I was thinking about, I forgot how this came. I think I was having a discussion with somebody and somehow Patrick Stewart came about. And I'm like, oh my god. Jeffrey. I'm all excited. I'm very excited about next week and being able to see Jeffrey. I thought I had it on DVD somewhere around here. I didn't, so I have to rent it from Netflix. Unfortunately, it's disc, so it's not. Well, actually, fortunately, because then I can see if there's any extras. But that thing's hard to find to buy. You go to Amazon, and all it is third party sellers.
Mm.
They're not selling it directly, which makes me a little upset because it's an awesome movie. But we'll talk about that next week. Jeffrey, Toy Story Story 3, which I think at least Fuzz and I are already seeing. Simon, have you seen that already?
Oh, yes. I saw it this weekend.
And in the future, we're going to talk about one, which is really more of a teaser trailer, The Smurfs. So there's plenty of ways.
La, 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 la.
There's plenty of ways to contact us to participate in this show. We would like to hear your feedback. Shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Check out the website and the blog. Comment on the blog at cubsoutloud.com/movies. We got a Twitter account, twitter.com/colmovies. We got a Facebook page, facebook.com/colmovies. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. I haven't checked recently. Is there any new ratings or anything? I don't think there is. Go on there, rate us, leave us a review. We'd like to hear how you like it. 5 stars, we'll give you a shout out on the show. You can also call and leave a message. Just leave that on the COL talk line. That's 361 COL talk. I forgot to put the actual numbers on here, so I forgot what it is, but everybody can look at a phone and dial COL talk. So that's something.
All right.
So that's it for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Good night, everybody.
Happy Pride.
Night, night.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
They're looking at you, kid.
End of line.